asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The death toll in California's wildfires has risen to 44, with more than 200 people still unaccounted for. US President Donald Trump says he's approved a request to declare the fires in California a major disaster, meaning people affected are eligible for federal government aid. Kate Fisher reports from Washington.
Around 200 people remain unaccounted for. Emergency services hoping that they have evacuated and they're staying with friends, but clearly there is a search going on for those people. But the fires still continue to blaze, and they will do so for many days to come, because the weather forecast is one of continued high winds, which has been one of the major problems for this, and continued dry weather, very low humidity, which means there's nothing to put that fire out. The firefighters need the help of Mother Nature, if you like. They need it to start raining.
Israeli fighter jets have been pounding Palestinian military targets in Gaza, with at least 7 Palestinians killed. It follows militants firing over 400 rockets at Israel since Monday. Both Israel and Hamas have threatened to escalate their responses after violence started over the weekend when a covert Israeli mission was exposed. Ethiopia is accusing its National Intelligence Service of planning a bomb attack on its Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in June. Dozens of security officials arrested in Addis Ababa have been arraigned before court and accused of causing insecurity as well as human rights violations. Kaleta Wanjohi reports from Addis.
4 people died and dozens injured in June when a grenade was hurled at Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in a public rally. According to the Attorney General, the head of the National Intelligence Service liaised with one woman to find people to carry out the grenade attack. The intelligence service is accused of fueling ethnic tension by using people from the Prime Minister's ethnic background to commit the offense. The 63 detained security officials have been denied bail. They are also accused of torturing citizens in 7 safe houses discovered in the capital, Addis Ababa.
The Italian government says it would be committing economic suicide if it buckled to EU pressure over its budget plan. With an imminent deadline to resubmit a budget to Brussels which controls spending more, Rome says it won't move one bit. Jack Parrott reports from FSN Brussels.
Italy's Interior Minister Matteo Salvini says they will not fall in line with what he called threats from EU commissioners in Brussels and adapt their budget for 2019. The populist coalition in Rome was elected on a promise to end austerity and submitted a budget which outlines a deficit of 2.4%, which is much higher than the EU would like. Italy's national debt runs at around 131% of GDP, and the European Commission insists that needs to be brought down by restricting spending.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Cheers, Ollie. Tuesday the 13th. Easy for me to say or not. Welcome!
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Well, 2 years ago, I had an amazing conversation with Oxford-educated PhD, even Catherine Horton, an incredible woman who worked on the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, amongst other things. Came on this show for the first time back in December of 2016 to talk about the directed energy weapon harassment used against her by security agencies in this country and elsewhere. It's an amazing conversation with a very credible woman. It's been a long time since she was on the program. We're going to catch up with her today. She'll join us live from her home, Dr. Catherine Horton, PhD. A lot of interest in this, understandably. Looking forward to that. Before that, though, in about 20 minutes' time, Mike Rivero signs in from Oahu in Hawaii. Michael joins me every month. We have a look over the big news stories of the day and of the week. Top man, whatreallyhappened.com is his website, and the radio show, the What Really Happened radio show, is unmissable. Mike Rivero live this hour. as usual, and I say it every day and I say it in the same way. I could be a rapper. If you want to talk to me, do so through Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That is my Twitter handle. This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. And I'm Richie Allen. Good to be with you this Tuesday evening. Da-da-da-da. Yeah. Bit of music that you hear before the programme is often not lined up by me. It's just random stuff. So I can't get Tavares. Heaven must be missing an angel out of my head now. I'll be singing it in my sleep tonight. Heaven must be missing an angel. Rule number two for radio broadcasters. Never sing on the radio. Never do it. Don't do it ever. It's not good enough. It's not acceptable. Big news. Or is it big news? Big news. Big news. The BBC report, and have been reporting for the last few minutes, that there has been an agreement on a draft Brexit withdrawal, and the agreement, a draft Brexit withdrawal paper, and the agreement has been reached by the UK and the EU. Right? Right. And apparently there will be a special cabinet meeting tomorrow to discuss it. And apparently the Sun newspaper is reporting that every government minister was being summoned even to number 10 to see Theresa May for one-to-one talks today. This evening even. So the future of the Irish border has been the last major outstanding issue to be settled. Apparently, this backstop thing. Earlier today, ministers said they would publish a full legal statement before MPs vote on any final agreement. So, the press is reporting in the UK tonight that the UK and the European Union have reached a consensus on a draft Brexit withdrawal agreement. Remember the Ides of November. The European Union wants the entire United Kingdom to stay in a customs union indefinitely to avoid any problems on the Northern Ireland border with Ireland, with the Republic of Ireland. Brexiteers have not been happy, saying there would have to be a very limited time period for that, as the UK had to leave the customs union in order to honour the referendum result of 2016. I'm not going to say much more about it. We'll get into it maybe tomorrow. Other than to say that earlier today, the former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has basically been asking the cabinet to stage a mutiny on these plans because he's calling it a total surrender. He's even used the terminology the punk of Brussels, namely that the UK would be a punk of Brussels, the bitch of Brussels, basically. That the UK would be even in a worse position than it was before the Brexit referendum result. He's called it shameful, and that the UK, he has said, Boris Johnson has said, would be trapped in a customs union indefinitely. That's what's going to happen. Where are the likes of Jacob Rees-Mogg today? Where is David Davis today? Well, they're absent. At least it's coming up for 9 minutes past five UK time as I record this show live. I haven't heard a word from either of those men. Maybe during this programme and after this programme, these guys will come out and speak. Very interesting. All right. Seven people have been killed in Gaza. Now, you heard this on the news with Ollie Barrett there. Israel is claiming that more than 400 rockets have been fired into Israel by militants overnight, while Israeli aircraft has hit 150 militant targets in response. That's the Israeli claim, anyway. Six Palestinians, four of them militants, according to the Israelis, died in the strikes on Gaza, and a Palestinian civilian was killed in an attack in southern Israel, apparently. The United Nations is calling on all sides to show restraint. Yeah. Again, the Israelis are claiming, and the UK news bureaus and the news bureaus of the West are only reporting that which is given to them by the Israelis. It's rip and read. This is bollocks, right? They are given stuff from the Israeli Defense Ministry and they rearrange the words into radio speak and they basically vomit up that which has been given to them by Tel Aviv. 400 rockets, says Israel. Well, it must be true then. Right? Right. This is all about, apparently, this undercover Israeli Special Forces operation, which happened on Sunday, which ended up in a Hamas commander being killed, along with seven others. Apparently, an Israeli lieutenant colonel was killed on Sunday as well. So the Israeli military has been accused by this program and by other independent media outlets of genocidal behaviour against the Palestinians forever. Well, in my lifetime anyway. But also, we've talked a lot about what's been happening there in the last few months with the murder of hundreds of Palestinians on the fence that was erected by the Israelis. So the Israelis continue to say that we're acting in self-defence here, but they are pathological liars and genocidal maniacs. The Israelis lie as often as they breathe in and out. They're claiming that they're targeting Hamas military positions, but thankfully, there are those in Gaza that still have access to smartphones and camera phones because footage is emerging showing that large residential buildings have been levelled, which flies in the face of the Israeli claims that they're only targeting Hamas positions. They're not. They're targeting civilians. It's what the lunatic Israeli Defence Forces do. But you know what? Who cares, eh? Who cares? Who cares? 700,000 people. 700,000 people signed a petition to see an advert for Christmas made by a national supermarket. 700,000. That's what people get up in arms about. I want to see the Iceland Christmas ad. 700,000. While people are being blown to smithereens in Gaza and in Yemen and elsewhere. But I want the X Factor. I want it now. And I want to see a stupid fucking ad for Christmas. That's what riles people up these days. X Factor goes off the air because of sound issues. Bring down the government. We live in a lunatic asylum. A lunatic asylum when these are the priorities, right? Right. You said it, I know I've said it before, but I'm saying it again. I can do that. You'll remember that Bayer took over Monsanto, right? That's a mega evil maniacal company taking over another mega evil maniacal company. Bayer. Talked a lot about, or Bayer as they are called. And you'll remember that a Californian man won a $289 million verdict against Monsanto when a court accepted that Roundup, which is glyphosate-based weed killer, actually caused his cancer. Because it does cause cancer. Of course it does. Anyway, Bayer or Bayer have admitted that they are now facing a litany of lawsuits. And they disclosed today that there are 9,300 plaintiffs suing them. And that's by the end of October. They expect more plaintiffs to come forward. The lawsuits allege that the weed-killing products, including Roundup, cause cancer, which they do. Right? The plaintiffs claim that it's even worse that Roundup causes cancer. Worse, again, is that Bayer and Monsanto knew about this, knew about the risks, but failed to tell people and warn people adequately. As you would imagine, the company is rejecting all the accusations, claiming that there are hundreds of scientific studies that show glyphosate is harmless. But of course, the vast majority of those studies have been paid for by Monsanto. Again, demonstrated this in programs that I've been making for years. Glyphosate's the active ingredient in Roundup. It is deadly. Don't use their products or their frankenseeds. Don't use any product made by Bayer or Monsanto or made by their hundreds of subsidiary companies. Boycott them. End of story. I've been asked by a listener who listens in Texas to look at a couple of stories about free speech in American universities and about Christianity. A couple of interesting cases. Nobody in the UK outside of RT has covered these stories. A couple of interesting cases in the US. Last month, or was it in September? I think it might have been September. A young woman called Polly Olson sued Northwestern Wisconsin Technical College, saying that her free speech rights had been violated. Why? Well, she was handing out religiously themed Valentines to her fellow students. So an observer complained about her. So this woman, Polly Olson, is a Christian. She was handing out religiously themed Valentines to some of her fellow students. An observer noticed this and complained to the campus security office. Christ. And basically said the cards were offensive. Now, the cards had messages on them like, Jesus loves you. Fair enough. But it was deemed that she was soliciting by distributing these outside the designated free speech zone. Isn't that a wonderful concept? The madness of that. Here's a college campus, and this little 20 feet over there, that 20 square meters, that's a free speech zone. But everywhere else, you got to be very careful about what you say, apparently. So she's suing the college anyway. We'll see how she gets on. And at the University of California at Berkeley, there's a young woman called Isabel Chow. She's been asked to resign from the Student Senate. Why? Because she abstained from a vote against Trump's proposed changes to Title IX. Now, those changes will mean that sex is defined as a person's biological sex at birth. She's a Christian. She decided to abstain from the vote because of her beliefs. She released a statement before the vote saying that she hoped to avoid the confusion and outrage that would inevitably follow by talking about her ethical conflict. I oppose discrimination in all forms, she said, but I can't vote for this bill without compromising my values. She's a Christian and abstained because she believes that you are the sex that you are born with. But you can't say that anymore. You can't even abstain from a vote that would condemn the Trump administration's amendments to Title IX. You can't even do that. You're a bigot, so you have to resign. Yeah, what do I think about that? I think it's crazy. I think in the case of the young woman who's handing out Jesus loves you messages, how could that be offensive to anybody? I'm not a Christian. I'm not Jewish. I'm not a Muslim. I don't believe in God, and I don't observe any organized religion. I don't worship, right? But I go through Manchester City Centre regularly enough, and there are some very nice people from different faiths and different backgrounds, and they hand out leaflets, and the leaflets generally say, Jesus loves you, or, you know, there might be something about the Quran or about Muhammad. How could it be offensive, you know? Just say, hello, hell yeah. No thanks, I'm not interested, but have a good day, eh? Nice to meet you. How hard is that? Here's an interesting thing from the European Court of Justice. It has decreed, it has decided that the taste of a food cannot be protected by copyright. Isn't that an interesting one now? This was a case involving a Dutch cheese. And the European Court of Justice was asked to rule in the case of a spreadable cream cheese and herb dip produced by a Dutch company. The Dutch company, Livola, argued that another cheese infringed its copyright. They claimed that Hexen Kaas was a work protected by copyright, their own cheese, and it asked the Dutch courts to insist that Smilde, the producers of Witte Vieven Kaas, stop producing their cheese because it infringed on their copyright. This is utterly bizarre. But the Court of Justice of the European Union basically ruled, no, sorry, you can't copyright a taste. Corporations are lunatics, aren't they? They are basically lunatic asylums. And I know that some pretty nice people work within corporations. I know this. But the entity itself, the corporation, is utterly mad, right? And is hell-bent on copyrighting and claiming every square inch of planet Earth for itself. Madness. In this sense, we have to say fair play to the European Court of Justice there. Good stuff. 19 and a half minutes past the hour. The California wildfires. Now, long-time listeners of this programme will be aware of Paul Craig Roberts, the former Assistant Secretary to the Treasury under Ronald Reagan. Wonderful guy, very interesting man, and appears on this programme regularly enough. Now, Paul has a network of contacts, as you'd expect, and he sends out emails and he copies in pretty much everybody he knows in those emails. And I was very interested to see an exchange between Paul and some academics in the US about the nature of the fires in California. And it seems that Paul Craig Roberts, very learned man, great writer, journalist as well as economic expert, but Paul is not happy with these fires. And some of the people associated with Paul over the years are also finding some anomalies in these fires. And they are asking questions about whether these fires are natural or not. I find this very interesting. I don't know a lot about it. But directed energy weapons have come up in the conversations. And I find it fascinating whether it is possible to use directed energy weapons to start wildfires. But even more interesting, why would anybody want to do that? What would be the end game? And so on, so on, so on. Interesting, we'll be speaking with Catherine Horton on the programme a bit later. But I will ask Mike, Michael Rivero, who will be joining me in a few minutes' time, live from Oahu, has he come across these claims? And is it something that he's following? We'll talk to Mike about a lot as well. A lot of other things. 21 and a half minutes past the hour. You can tweet the programme, by the way. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Frances Leader is listening. How you doing, Frances? She was a guest on the programme a week or so ago. Corporations are lunatic asylums. Yes, she says. Anybody who's, if you've not seen the Joel Bakan film, well, Joel Bakan wrote a book called The Corporation. It was made into a film, and I think it's available on YouTube. It's like 2 hours, 20 minutes long. Came out in 2004, I think, and it's a film about the psychopathy of the corporate entity. It begins talking about how corporations won the legal right to be deemed as a person, a single person under the law, because by doing that it gave corporations a lot of advantages and it made it easier for corporations to externalise all the bad shit that corporations do, right? Foist all the pollution and all the wreckage of land and waterways onto the public. But it's a very good film if you haven't seen it. The Corporation, made in 2003 or 2004, and I think it's available on YouTube now. Okay. Hi to JP in Manchester, who says, Richie, the white race includes Jews. They are not separate from us, just divided by inherent beliefs and cult. Divided by inherent beliefs and cult religion. They're all cults, and I'm including all the new age groups too, says JP. Thanks for that, JP. Very interesting that, yeah. You know, you can go to Israel if you want. There are a number of organisations in Israel who will happily convert or assist you in your conversion to Judaism and ultimately assist you in helping you to become a Jew. Now, I have for years been saying, and I've been called a bigot for saying it, not that I give a damn, Jew or Jews are not an ethnic group. They're not. Jews are white people who believe in a fairy godfather in the sky. And that's about the size of it. And they originate mostly from Eastern Europe. They are not an ethnic group unto themselves. There is nothing genetically different between Jewish people and Irish people. Or Jewish people and English people. It's very interesting that it's come up in the news, actually. I think one of these Nazi white supremacists whom were convicted in, was it in the Midlands in the last couple of days? And it's a couple who wanted to call their baby Hitler. Did you read that story? A couple were convicted of being members of a proscribed group, proscribed meaning banned, of course, and proper idiots, this couple now, Nazis, the swastikas, the whole lot, morons, right? They called their child Hitler, or tried to anyway, but it turns out that the male half of that couple apparently some years ago spent time in Israel as part of converting to become a Jew. And I always find it very funny. On the one hand, Israelis will tell you the Jews are an ethnic group and Jews belong to the land. The Jews are the rightful inhabitants of Palestine, which they're not, of course. It's all a nonsense. And, you know, we're an ethnic group. And then they'll have anybody. Well, if you're white. They don't like blacks too much. Look at the treatment of Ethiopian Jews. Proper racist, the Israeli state. Not Israelis now. Not every Israeli man or woman, of course. That would be a foolish thing to say. But the Israeli establishment is fundamentally racist, as we know. Just ask Ethiopian Jews. You'll get a lot of interesting things from Ethiopian Jews. Right, it's 25 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show, live on richieallen.co.uk. We're on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and triggerwarning.tv, tune in radio as well. It's nearly time to head over to Oahu to speak to the one and only Michael Rivero. Again, keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show. Don't forget, in just over 30 minutes' time, Catherine Horton will join the programme for the first time in a couple. Well, it's not first time in a couple of years. She was first on in December 2016. I think a few months later, a few months after that, Catherine joined us, but she's back on the programme. We're live to Hawaii. A terrific radio presenter and broadcaster. A career spanning many years in films as well, in NASA, in science. WhatReallyHappened.com is a must read and a must watch website, and the What Really Happened radio show is absolutely terrific. Every month he joins me for a roundup of the big stories of the day. Let's welcome back to the programme our great friend Michael Rivero. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing fine. How are you doing today?
I'm not much better than I was when we spoke last. I was just getting over a horrible illness when we spoke last, Mike, but I'm great, and I love having you on. Thanks for coming back. Now, you wouldn't have heard this, excuse me, because you were beavering away, presumably preparing your own programme, but Dr. Paul Craig Roberts is someone we both know, and
yes.
I get copied in on Paul's emails. Paul's an avid... He sends out emails 5-6 times a day with various things that interest him. He's not dogmatic. I like it. Some of his contacts, some of whom are scientists, have been asking questions about these California wildfires, Michael. Questions about the fires in terms of, are they natural? Is there something more sinister going on with these fires? And a couple of people connected to Paul have been throwing out words like directed energy weapons. What's going on in California, Michael? There's been a large loss of life there, hasn't there? Over 40 people have died, and it's making the news over here. What's happening?
Well, 40 people have died, and there are more than 300 still reported missing. But what's going on really is, in this case, President Trump is correct. It's a classic case of massive mismanagement by the state of California, which several years ago pulled back on care of the forests under the claim of environmentalism. They wanted the forest to go back to being more natural, being more like nature intended them to be. And of course, it saved them a lot of money because they weren't having to clear out the dead brush. They weren't having to bulldoze the fire breaks to keep them open. But there was a prior example over at Yellowstone National Park where they did the same thing, where they said, we're just going to pull back and let nature take its course. And, of course, the dead brush built up and a lightning storm came over, set it off, and they had a massive wildfire there. And this is just basically a repeat of that. And so they should have known a lot better. But what's really driving this, of course, is money. California didn't want to spend the money on keeping the fire breaks open. They didn't want to spend the money on clearing out the dead brush underneath the forest. They wanted to spend the money on making sure that the illegal immigrants had driver's licenses and were registered to vote and all kinds of free stuff there. And so Trump is right to say that this is really the result of colossal mismanagement by the California government.
Right. Now, I will invite later on in the week, I will invite somebody on to talk about this from, I don't know, and that's a perfectly reasonable explanation you've given there. There's some very interesting pictures, though, and PCR, as we call him, Paul, has been sharing some photographs of some extraordinary damage done to vehicles. And yet, surrounding those vehicles, vegetation that seems to be untouched. And a lot of other people might. Now, look, you and I have been doing programs like this for a long time. You've been doing it longer than I have. And I would admit that, you know, there are a lot of cranks claiming to be independent researchers. And I know that their job is to discredit quality and proper researchers, like yourself, I would say. And I'm well aware of that. But I think there are some credible people, Michael, asking about some of the photographs and, you know, and some of these people do believe that there's something maybe a little bit more sinister than just mismanagement going on. Are you discounting that completely?
Yeah, at this point, I'm discounting that. I think they're trying to put that out there to basically cover up the fact that the California government was not managing the forests correctly, that they didn't learn the lessons from Yellowstone, that they were trying to basically save money by not taking care of the forest lands in order to have it to spend on registering illegal immigrants to vote. And that's all it really was. I mean, if you leave a forest alone, every once in a while, there's a massive wildfire. And that's exactly what happened. And of course, it didn't help that the Santa Ana winds were just blowing this fire all over the place. But Trump is right to say this was just colossal mismanagement on the part of the state of California.
Fair enough, Mike. We'll leave that there. I just want to acknowledge that listeners are sending me a quote allegedly attributed to some former U.S. military officer and intelligence analyst who's coined the phrase Operation Torch California. Look, I don't know. I'm open-minded, as I know you are, my friend. First of all, it's got to be pointed out, if evidence crossed Michael Rivero's desk that proved that there were energy weapons being used here, Mike would be the first to broadcast it. It's fair to say that. Michael, it looks like the UK and the European Union have agreed a draft withdrawal agreement, which is going to be ratified by the UK government tomorrow, at least by government ministers anyway. It's not at all certain, in fact I don't believe it will happen, that it will possibly get through Parliament, because the opposition Labour Party won't support it, and apparently many of Theresa May's own Conservative Party MPs won't support it. Boris Johnson, the former Foreign Secretary and general buffoon, let's be honest about it, but he has been saying that what Theresa May is going to agree with the European Union is just about going to keep the UK in the European Union in all but name, keep us in vassalage and as a kind of a colony of the EU with no say whatsoever. Michael, is anybody interested in this in the US? Is this getting airplay over there?
This is not really getting the attention in the United States that it deserves, because of the issue of encroaching globalism all across, not just Europe, but here in the United States with the North American Union. It is an area of concern that, yeah, Brexit is trying to exercise its right to leave the European Union, and Theresa May has negotiated an agreement that's a Brexit in name only. And there's this huge divorce payment that's going to the EU and an agreement to continue obeying with a lot of the EU policies regarding open borders and trade.
That's right. That's exactly right. And a lot of talk about democracy, Michael, today, and a lot of people whom are basically subverting democracy by ignoring the result of the referendum 2 years ago are now demanding that the people get some second vote or some final say on any deal that's put forward. I suppose historically, Michael, what we've seen when tyrannical organisations like the European Union, when countries have attempted to leave it or voted down its treaties, it generally comes back and asks the question until the people get it right. Would you be of the opinion that if there was another referendum, that people who voted to leave, Michael, would be so fed up and so disillusioned that they just wouldn't go out to vote, and in another referendum, the European Union would get its own way?
I think in a second referendum, they would simply try much harder to rig the election in the direction that the Remainers wanted to go. And if you look at the recent midterm elections here in the United States, you will come to understand that election fraud is a major, major problem all over the world. And I understand that, that there is, in fact, a petition in the United Kingdom against a second referendum saying, let the original vote stand.
Yeah, and I suppose if I'm the chief negotiator for the European Union, I'd rather that the United Kingdom was humiliated in the way that Theresa May is going to humiliate it by keeping it in via the back door, a Brexit in name only. You know, it's proper humiliation for the country to be still subject to freedom of movement, to still have to pay in for access, to pay in all that money every year, but ultimately to have less of a say than you actually did three or 4 years ago. That would be the way that I would go anyway. News today, Michael, and this is something that's dear to your heart. You've been covering this for years. Michael will, of course, know, as will his own listeners, that Bayer took over in a takeover the Frankenfood company Monsanto, of course, the biotech company Monsanto. And Bayer acknowledged yesterday, that it's got 9,500 possible lawsuits pending. 9,300 plaintiffs are coming forward to say that exposure to glyphosate through Roundup or the other weed killers has affected their health. This is a very interesting one, Michael. First of all, that $289 million verdict that went against Monsanto in California. Michael, how safe is that verdict? Would you worry about the appeal?
Well, I mean, the amount of the award has already been reduced by the judge down to something like, I think it was $20 million, which is still significant. But we know that American companies have a long history of putting out very dangerous, toxic chemicals, products, and just relying on having a lot of lawyers to protect them when the lawsuits come on in. But in the case of glyphosate and Roundup Ready products, I think this is another case where the problems are just too great, and that eventually the lawsuits are going to be so great that the company is going to have to basically concede defeat and pull the product off the market.
Michael, wasn't there... I'm an avid reader of legal fiction, but not just legal fiction, legal non-fiction. I love reading books about the law and high-profile cases. Didn't your government... Now, it was either on George W. Bush's watch or it was on Obama's watch, but didn't they make class action lawsuits basically a thing of the past? That was something that major companies feared. Wasn't there reform of tort law brought in which made it difficult for large numbers of people to go after companies?
Well, there have been efforts to try and reduce the effects of class action lawsuits, but they're still perfectly legal here. What was a concern, and this came in under the Bush administration, was that certain companies were indemnified against class action lawsuits for bad products that they made, and that included things like vaccines. So it's been a trend in the United States where large corporations are becoming protected by the law against lawsuits resulting from bad quality products.
And that's significant, Michael, because the 9,500 cases against Monsanto, if we went back 10 years, Monsanto stroke Bayer, they would be in serious trouble now. Well, they would begin the settling process immediately, wouldn't they?
Well, we would like to see them settle the process, but what we really want to do is incentivize the quality testing of the products before they're sent to market.
Isn't it amazing that we're still talking about this company in 2018? And probably one of the early chats that you and I had when I was making radio in Spain, we talked about the harm, the potential harms and the legacy that these genetically engineered organisms could bring about, the harm they could do to the environment and to people. And it seems that as the years have gone on, more and more has emerged about how unsafe the products are from these companies. But it seems that governments don't want to take them on, Michael. Is their influence so great within governments around the world? Or
yeah, they are. There's no question about it. I mean, there was that scandal where Bayer was caught selling a hemophilia medication that was tainted with the HIV virus. And when it first came out, they couldn't sell it here in the U.S., so they just sold it into other countries where there weren't laws against that. It's all about making the money. We know that these companies do provide tremendous lobbying budgets to get members of Congress to say, yeah, you can't sue these companies anymore if they put out a dangerous and bad product. And it is a terrible issue because people are being hurt by all of these products, whether it's GMO or the Roundup Ready or the glyphosate. We know that glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen as declared by the World Health Organization, yeah. Rather, and probably would have been declared as a definite carcinogen, except that, again, Monsanto was just using their lobbying power to try and protect their reputation. And so we're in a situation right now where basically money can buy the government. And if we rely on the government to tell us what is safe and what is not, we can get lured into using products that really are not safe for us. But we're told that they're safe only because there's enough money behind them.
Absolutely right. Michael Rivera is our guest. We've got Mike for another 10 minutes or thereabouts. Loads of tweets on this. It's at Richie Allen Show, by the way. That's the Twitter handle. Michael is on Twitter as well, at WRH_Rivero. Michael can be found at whatreallyhappened.com. Check it out. It's packed full of important information, facts and stories that you will not read in the corporate-controlled media. Whatreallyhappened.com. And the radio show is terrific as well. So the Israelis are saying, Michael, that 400 rockets were fired overnight by the Palestinians, by Hamas. All the information being broadcast and being reported on UK media is coming directly from the Israeli Defense Ministry. Can we believe them?
No. I mean, truth is the first casualty of any war, and we know that Israel is basically getting ready to go on into Gaza and take out Hamas, and either take over direct control of Gaza or return it under control of the Palestinian Authority, which is working closely with the government of Israel. So, no, I'm not willing to believe or accept at face value claims about how all of a sudden these starving Gazans are able to come up with all of these rockets and mortar rounds and other weapons to attack Israel with.
When you see some of the footage provided by the Israelis, now, just to be fair for a minute, if you're in a community and something lands, if it's bigger than, I don't know, if it's bigger than a chair, or if it's bigger than, or if it's nearly the size of a motorbike, you know, if it hits you, it's going to kill you. But still, that being said, when you see the wreckage or the footage provided by the Israelis, we keep going back to this thing that Wile E. Coyote had access to better rockets than the Palestinians, right? I mean, it's a nonsense. It is, people always laugh when I say that, but it is pathetic when they do these demonstrations for Israeli news and they show these things. And you think, well, if you're indoors, even if Hamas did fire that, if you're indoors, it's very unlikely to, you know, do you any physical damage. It might damage your car, or it might damage the size of your house. Israelis will listen, they won't listen to this, but when they do, they say, you know, the people like you and me are too quick to dismiss what it's like for Israeli civilians when these rockets come in. But I always say I'm not convinced that every single rocket fired in is coming from the Palestinian territory and is coming from Hamas militants. You know, some of this stuff has got false flag written all over it, Michael.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And like you, I am not willing to assume at face value that these rockets and mortar shells are fired by the Gazans. I suspect agent provocateurs are sending these off in order to give Israel an excuse to mount another military operation against Palestine.
What about now? I mean, we had this ridiculously, offensively entitled Operation Protective Edge back in 2014. And there are those who follow Israel, Palestine, who follow the plight of the Palestinians, who have been murmuring And I've been worried for a number of months now that we're on the verge of another all-out offensive by the Israelis in the territory. What do you think?
I agree. I've been watching the signs here where Israel's talking about a final military solution to the problem of Gaza. And I think they basically want to take it back over again. And all the way back when Ariel Sharon surrendered Gaza, it was done with this kind of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink agreement that the rest of the world would ignore the building of illegal settlements in the West Bank because Gaza was going back to the control of the Palestinians. And even back then, I said, as soon as the illegal settlements are facts on the ground in the West Bank, Israel will move to recapture Gaza. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Michael Rivera is our guest, whatreallyhappened.com. Mike, in the 5 or 6 minutes that we have left, I want to talk to you about free speech. Again, something you and I have spoken about time and time again on our programs. I got an email from a chap who lives in Texas, and he was a bit, not dismayed, but I've always been happy to lay my spiritual cards on the table. I don't believe in the God I was brought up to believe, but I don't disrespect those who do. I don't mind when I'm out and about and somebody wants to talk to me about Jesus. I don't get offended by it. You know, we have a conversation and what have you. I don't subscribe to any of the organized religions. But my listener in Texas said, he said, guys like you, Richie, are too quick to dismiss that there is an agenda to quieten, to silence, and to marginalize Christians, particularly white Christians. And he sent me links to a couple of stories that have happened in, not so much in your part of the world, but in California. One being of, that one was in Wisconsin, the young woman who handed out Valentines, which said, Jesus loves you, or something like that. And she was reported to campus security for madness. And then there was the woman at Berkeley in California who, because she's a Christian, didn't want to vote against Title IX, which is Trump basically saying that you are what you were born as. So if you're born with a penis, you are the male sex. And if you're born with a vagina, you are the female sex. And I think the students wanted to vote against this in the university or stand up to it. And she said, well, I'm a Christian, so I'm going to abstain. And her resignation was called for. The question is it, are we taking one or two stories and are we magnifying them? Or is there an agenda against white Christian people in general?
I think there's an agenda against white people in general. There's an agenda against Christianity and religion in general. Mostly what is going on is the globalist New World Order agenda is trying to keep everybody confused about who they are. And that's one of the reasons why they're pouring refugees into Europe and here in the United States of America. They're trying to sort of blur us all together so we forget our historical roots. We lose our sense of cultural identity. We lose our sense of historical identity. We lose our sense of religious identity, because that way, if we're all confused and blended together, we are easier to control. And I think that's what's going on.
It's interesting, at a time when more and more vulnerable groups are being created by the authorities, in brackets, in inverted commas. You know, more and more people who you can't speak about lest they be offended. It seems that it is open season on Christians, whether they're white Christians or black Christians. You know, if you want to have a go at Christianity, and I can say that because I am white, of course, but I'm certainly not a Christian. And when I walk down the street and somebody says to me, hello, Jesus loves you, would you like to take a leaflet? I'm quite happy to say, how are you doing? It's not for me, thanks, but have a good day anyway. How could you be offended, yeah, Michael? How could you be offended? It's madness, isn't it, to be offended at somebody saying, yes, how are you? Here, take this Valentine. Oh, I'm going to run to security now. Mad world, Michael. I'm going to give you the final word on that, right? On folks, check out whatreallyhappened.com. If you haven't checked out Michael's show before, I'm sure you have. Check it out. Find him on Twitter as well, at @WRH_Rivero. Where are we going to be in a few years, Mike? Are we still going to be talking about this stuff, you and me, or will things have improved?
I would like to see them improve, obviously. But I think we have some very dark times ahead of us in terms of either a complete Soviet Union-style collapse of the United States, or we're going to have to go through a third world war.
Let's hope not, Mike. Brilliant to have you on. Thanks for getting up early to speak to us. I know you're up doing your production for your own program, whatreallyhappened.com, folks. Always a pleasure, Michael. We'll talk again, the last one before Christmas. We'll chat again in December. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Great stuff, Michael. Thanks a lot. Michael Rivero there, live in the early AM from Oahu in Hawaii. It's early Tuesday morning there. Top man. Good to have him on, as always. It's right, it's very interesting now what's happening in London. Talked to you at the beginning of the programme, didn't I, dear listener, and said that the UK government and the European Union has agreed, has accepted, has basically come to an arrangement on a Brexit withdrawal agreement. It's pretty big news, that, right? And the Theresa May was summoning to her, to number 10, senior ministers and ministers of state and cabinet secretaries to show them this deal, the draft, the text, what's in the text. Well, former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has apparently seen the text and has said that the agreement will keep the United Kingdom in the customs union and the single market. For the first time in 1,000 years, this Parliament will not have a say in the laws of this country, something which would be utterly unacceptable, says Johnson. I hope the Cabinet will do the right thing, and I hope they will chuck it out. Now, we can hear Jacob Rees-Mogg on this draft government agreement. I did mention, didn't I, at the top of the programme, no word from Rees-Mogg or David Davis. Well, in fairness, Jacob Rees-Mogg has spoken to the BBC. This is what he had to say.
Well, if what we've heard is true, this fails to meet the Conservative Party's manifesto, and it fails to meet many of the commitments that the Prime Minister makes. It would keep us in the customs union and de facto in the single market. This is the vassal state. It is a failure of the government's negotiating position. It is a failure to deliver on Brexit. And it is potentially dividing up the United Kingdom. It is very hard to see any reason why the Cabinet should support Northern Ireland being ruled from Dublin.
And that's the latest from Jacob Rees-Mogg, of course, Conservative backbencher, staunch Brexiteer. Boris Johnson says it's a disaster. He has seen this draft deal, which apparently was agreed by both the European Union and the UK and Theresa May and Dominic Raab, who's the Brexit secretary. Now, interestingly enough, the BBC are reporting that Michel Barnier, who's the obviously the chief negotiator for the European Union, he's apparently said that we are not there yet. Now, this is Vice President Frans Timmermans, who is a spokesperson, a spokesman for Michel Barnier. And he said the talks have made progress, but we are not there yet. The UK Cabinet will meet tomorrow and will take stock of what has happened. And that's coming from a government spokesman. We can't hear now from Boris Johnson himself, speaking to the BBC about 5 minutes ago. Here he is.
This has been well trailed. This has been a chronicle of a death foretold for some months now. And I think it's pretty much what Ollie Robbins and Sabine Vaughan agreed a few weeks back anyway. We're going to stay in the customs union on this deal. We're going to stay effectively in large parts of the single market. And that means it's vassal state stuff. We are going to, for the first time in 1,000 years, this place, this parliament, will not have a say over the laws that govern this country. It is a quite incredible state of affairs. It will mean that we are having to accept rules and regulations from Brussels over which we have no say ourselves. It is utterly unacceptable to anybody who believes in democracy. It is not the right way forward. And there is a kicker. And the kicker is that not only are we going to remain in the customs union and in large parts of the single market, but also we will not have protected our precious union. Because if you look at what they've agreed today, and again, we must caveat this and say you look at the reports, then it is also accepted that there must be customs and regulatory checks down the Irish Sea between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, which currently do not exist. And for the first time since partition, Dublin, under these proposals, would have more say in some aspects of the government of Northern Ireland than London. So I don't see how you can support it from a democratic point of view. I don't see how a unionist can support it. And I don't see how you can support it if you believe in the political economic freedom of this country. So if you ask my question, am I going to vote against it? The answer is yes.
There you are, Boris Johnson speaking to the BBC a short time ago. So this will bring Theresa May's government down, of course. It will. Why will it? Well, obviously senior Conservative backbenchers are going to vote against it. The Labour Party will vote against it. They will vote it down when it comes before Parliament. And that, of course, will ultimately scupper May. Number of commentators telling Sky and the BBC this afternoon that her time was basically up now. This would bring her down. Now, it's not a question of, we predicted that. There were several possibilities. After the country voted to leave in June of 2016, there were several ways that the referendum result could ultimately be overturned. This is one of them. I did say, and I've gotten it right to a point, I did say at the beginning, they would let this go on and on and on and on and on and on. First of all, it took months before they triggered Article 50. And then you had all that messing around when David Davis was the Brexit Secretary and the European Union wouldn't concede anything. And they were dragging it on and dragging it on and dragging it on. And they've dragged it now to the 11th hour. And May's position is untenable. No politician in Westminster, even the Remainers. The Remainers would love to vote for this. They would love to vote for this and would love to support May on this because it basically keeps the UK in the European Union via the back door. It's Brexit, but in name only. Still controlled by Brussels. Still freedom of movement. Still paying money in for access to the single market. It's a nonsense. So Remainers would love to support it, but they can't because they would be voted out in their own constituency at the next general election. They can't. So they've got to rail against it and vote against it for exactly the same reasons as Boris Johnson, even though they would say they want the UK to stay in the European Union. So May is toast, and I predict that we'll have an election. I could be wrong, but you can't see one this side of Christmas, can you really? Could you see an election in 4 weeks' time, in 5 weeks' time? Most likely in the midwinter, the late winter, or the very early spring, you'll get a different government, and that government then will basically tear up everything that's happened over the last 2 years. They'll make an argument for extending Article 50. That's what will happen, I reckon. They will make an argument for extending Article 50 after this ridiculous deal gets voted down. And we'll be in Neverland then. We'll be in a twilight world between extending Article 50 and the next general election. And as I said 2 years ago, the United Kingdom is not leaving the European Union, no matter what. This is the Richie Allen Show, live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, and TuneIn Radio. My name is Richie Allen. Catherine Horton joins me live in about 5 minutes' time. Don't miss it.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. We'll be right back.
Jimi Hendrix and all along the Watchtower on the Richie Allen Show. Some very interesting tweets coming in there. Very interesting tweets coming in there. Jason tweets, Richie, it's convenient that any election would take place in the middle of winter with snow on the ground to discourage the elderly, usually conservative leaning, from voting. That's from Jason there. Thanks, Jason. Dean Smith tweets, all stooges playing their part in the theatre of inevitability. Francis tweets, treason mayhem has obeyed the City of London financiers. Yes, I won't argue with that. Rich tweets, worryingly, I agree with a buffoon. Damn, he says. Jeff tweets, will nation states not be able to set their own rules with regard to immigration into their country? Well, this country won't be retaining or regaining even the right to set its own immigration limits. I've never been against immigration. I am an immigrant. I wasn't born in this country. I'm an Irishman. I came here on several occasions over the years, in fact, to find work, once way back in the mid-90s, once in the early noughties, and back in 2013. I'm a guest here. That's how I see it, anyway. I have a big old gob on me, and I have opinions about the establishment and about the House of Windsor that I'm not shy about sharing, but I'm an immigrant. And countries should be in a position to, when labour is needed in a country, when you can't find amongst your own people, when you can't find numbers of workers, of course you should be able to look overseas and bring in qualified men and women from overseas. Of course you should. You know, it's not an anti-immigration thing. I've explained it 1,000 times. In fact, I've done entire programmes on my own. When a guest has left me down, I've sat there and spoken at great length about say it for me, immigration. And what open door immigration policies did to working class men and women and low-skilled or semi-skilled workers in this country, but not only in this country, but in other countries. And I've spoken at length about how the migrant workers from Eastern Europe and from other parts of the world are not to blame for it. You know, you don't blame them for it. Yeah, public services are straining and wages go down and working conditions deteriorate, but it's not the fault of the migrant worker. It's the puppets who enact the policies or draw up the policies and then enact them that are to blame for it. And that's what, sadly, so many people can't see. And they choose identity politics. They choose, you know, to identify as, well, I'm a conservative and I'm on the alt-right, or I listen to Lauren Southern or Tommy Robinson, all that old crap. You know, that's just window dressing stuff to keep you ignorant. Goes far deeper. The European Union came out of the globalist petrochemical and financial elite's failure to take over Europe through their support of the Nazis in the Second World War. That's what happened. They knew what the Nazis were. They financed the Nazis. They knew what the Nazis were doing in the extermination camps of Germany and Eastern Europe. But they wanted Hitler to eventually succeed. We've talked about this. This is historically factual. And in the post-World War II Europe, where Europe was under the Nazi jackboot, they would then own the finances, but not only the finances, the real wealth of the continent. That was the plan. They failed, and out of their failure came the idea for the European Union. And I've just given you the clipped notes of that, three paragraphs there, but I've gone into this in great depth with some terrific researchers over the last few years. That is what happened. Right. Excuse me, it's 5 past the hour. Let's welcome our next guest back to the programme. Now, excuse me. She's a truly remarkable woman. And when I met her back in early December 2016, I was amazed speaking to her off air by how reasonable she was, by how lucid she was, how obviously highly intelligent she was, an incredibly articulate, educated woman. And yet she was telling me a story that was quite amazing. She came on to talk to us. First of all, she's an Oxford-educated particle physicist and has a doctorate in particle physics as well. Mentioned this before. She's worked at the Particle Collider in Germany, the Electron Synchrotron in Hamburg. She's also worked at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Geneva and Switzerland. Like I said, very bright, very articulate, and very well educated. And when she came onto this programme back in December 2016, it was to talk about what happened to her after she attended a court case in London. Attending the court case was actually part of systems analysis research. She was looking into the English legal system. She wasn't in court herself. What happened after that was a campaign of stalking that she believed and later found out was carried out by the intelligence agencies of this country. And it not only happened here, but it followed her right across Europe as well. The accounts are available on her own website, which is stop007.org. I will tweet out links to that. There are links to my earlier interviews with her. She's spoken to many independent radio programmes since then. Let's find out how she is. Let's welcome back to the programme Dr. Catherine Horton. Catherine, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Richie. I'm fine. First of all, I would like to check if you can hear me okay.
Oh, loud and clear. It sounds like you're in the room. You've got a great microphone there.
Okay, thank you. Because typically what happens when I come on a very important interview is that my microphone gets sabotaged or something else happens. So I'm very glad that we clearly have the full support of the intelligence agencies today.
You get the interference, do you? So when somebody rings you up, and I know that you get a lot of requests to speak, you do find that the equipment goes down, malfunctions, until the interview is cancelled, and then you find out afterwards it all comes back online.
Absolutely. And actually, these phenomena, they are not just random. I discovered through working with many whistleblowers that this is all part of technology that has already been deployed. So it's a completely integrated system that can take you down within moments. And so the telephone system is included in that, the internet, and many other technologies that I knew absolutely nothing about, you know, a couple of years ago.
You're very humble. I've enjoyed speaking with you in the past, and I've enjoyed listening to you speaking when you've talked to other programs. And I always emphasize your credentials, not because I'm in awe of your academic credentials. I'm not, but I respect them. But the reason I mention them is because, you know, people do listen to stuff like this. I shouldn't say stuff like this. They listen to accounts from people like you, and people are left incredulous. They're left with their mouths hanging open. They just can't believe it. And you're very humble. You accept that when people hear your account and the accounts of many other whistleblowers, they immediately jump to the conclusion, well, Catherine, genius and all as she is, she's had some sort of episode, you know. And you're humble when it comes to that. You don't get very antagonistic with people. You accept that some people just can't get their heads around that these programs actually exist and that you're not having some sort of, you know, psychosis or some sort of episode. How do you, I mean, you're pretty good at dealing with that, aren't you? Explain what it is that's going on, Catherine, from a technical point of view. What is happening to you and others? What sort of technology is being used against you? Talk to us about that.
So first of all, I would like to say, let's start with how to deal with this incredulity, because the technology ties in immediately into that. Well, first of all, when you talk to people about this reality, for it is a reality, you have to undo decades of programming that we never knew.
This has been well trailed. This has been a
so what you have to do is you have to kind of teach them a new worldview and make them sensitive to the existence of technology that seems high tech and modern to us, but is actually decades old. So what you have to do if you want to bring home to people what's going on right now in the world, and it's happening not just to me, but it's actually happening to every single person in Britain and in the Western world without their knowing, is you have to fast track them through decades of research and technological advances that actually happened back in the 50s, 60s and 70s. And you have to change their perception of history. So, for example, what happened to me, because you started with a quick summary of how you know, I ended up in this, is the first thing I noticed is that I started to be gang-stalked, and gang-stalked in a very systematic manner. And the people who were doing the stalking, they were professionally trained. They used the same hand signs. They had a certain pattern of organizing themselves in the street and moving around me in a cloud. So I knew that this is something very professional and has to come from the intelligence agencies. Well, after a few years of the stalking, where I was still under the illusion that if I just ignore it, everything will be fine, in 2016, in January, I started being assaulted 24/7 with directed energy weapons that I didn't even know existed. And with being assaulted, I mean being assaulted in my own private home. I started being pulsed and shocked and literally gunned with electromagnetic pulses in a manner that was very much akin to somebody coming up and prodding you, or somebody coming and hitting you over the head with a hammer. And it was so unusual. I knew it was nothing to do with me. And then I started working systematically as a scientist. I tried to buy measuring devices to measure if it was something electromagnetic or something, maybe an acoustic shockwave or something like that. And bit by bit, I discovered that what I was dealing with was most of the time electromagnetic, or what I would call electromagnetic. It was passing through walls, which is not too surprising, because we know, for example, that heat is passing through walls. That's infrared electromagnetic radiation. We also know that, for example, Wi-Fi is passing through walls. That's why we have, you know, internet reception within our flat, even if the router is two walls away from us or behind two walls. And then, so what I also discovered was that it was not just electromagnetic and was coming through walls. It was also highly focused or collimated and very targeted, and that it was being used as some type of harassment, some type of assault weaponry against me. And it took me years and years of figuring all this out. So everything that I summarized quickly was not just something that occurred to me, you know, tonight or last week. This is the work of years of hard work of trying to reverse engineer the technology that I'm being assaulted with. And then after I had digested that I'm being at the mercy of the intelligence agencies and that they are stalking me and unlawfully surveying me 24/7, and after I got used to the fact that they were actively trying to disrupt my life and destroy me, and when I had digested that I was actually being assaulted 24/7 with modern weaponry, there was a final shock for me in May 2017. And that's that was a couple of, well, it was a few months after my very first interview with you that I discovered that I was implanted with microchip technology. Yeah. And that I'd been implanted in a very systematic and targeted way. And I also discovered that I wasn't alone. I wasn't just a freak human experiment. I was one of literally thousands and thousands of people. And by now, I seriously believe that a significant fraction of the human population is already implanted with this microchip technology.
Thousands. When you say thousands, it might even be conservative, a figure, because the amount of people who got in touch with this program in the time after you'd come on, from all over the place, telling the same stories. And again, you always try and keep an open mind as a journalist, and while having respect for your interviewee, you know, you always try and keep an open mind and not be dogmatic. And if I saw some information that contradicted anything that I had been told by a guest, I would be open to it. But I couldn't find anything to contradict anything, and all I was getting was people telling the exact same story. And worryingly, like yourself, Catherine, they were often articulate, well-read people, educated people. And in many other cases, they had rubbed up against the establishment in some way or another. Like yourself, being through an Ivy League university, rubbing up against the intelligence agencies. And I began to see that there's a pattern emerging here. And, you know, these people are not deluded. They're not having some sort of psychotic episode. Something real is happening to them. And I have to say that, you know, I do believe it. And I must mention as well, before Catherine comes back in here, that she very cleverly, when this began happening to her, she launched her YouTube channel. And while this was going on, while these pulses were happening and were hitting her, she was recording the impact it was having on her and showing the data that she was getting. And that was brilliant, Catherine, you know. That went a long way, I think, to convincing some people who might have been on the fence that this was very real. And all those videos are still there on your YouTube channel. I'm pretty sure they're all still there now.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that I could do because I am a high energy physicist. I have been trained to a very high level, but I have to also say, and this is extremely important for all the other thousands of victims out there, I also, as a physicist, can confirm that it is incredibly hard to prove this. And there are several reasons for that, as I found out. Number one, it is because if you leave the house and leave your measuring devices just a single time unsupervised, the intelligence agencies will come in and they will override the hardware. And recently, a man called Richard Lighthouse, a former NASA engineer, confirmed that the measuring device that he has, which is identical to the make and model that I have, has been overwritten in exactly the frequency range where these pulses are being fired.
Wow, so he's a NASA engineer and it's happened to him as well.
Yes, exactly. And there's a very recent interview with him on my YouTube channel on the special investigators. And I'm trying to bring together those people who are not just reporting these crimes, they are actively investigating and launching court cases against it. And he's one of these people who has an active court case. And he has tracked the criminal network behind this all the way to Air Force Base Shriver, which he says has the control and certainly the surveillance of all the satellites in the world. So what is going on, I should say, is being launched through very many ways. So the shots that victims experience, they are being fired from neighbors, they can be fired from cars, even from rucksacks, but also from satellites. And for a long time, I was very reluctant to admit that it could be satellites, because my gut instinct is always to just stick to the simplest explanation. Yeah. and you know, don't go for the aliens and satellites and nonsense.
Well, that's the academic in you, you see. You're an academic and you know that. You know, you've got to get to reach people and to get people to consider it. You've got to, there's certain levels that you've got to meet people on. And I can understand why you were a bit reluctant about the satellites. I've had a theory. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, we've been connected on Twitter. It's been a while. It's been quite a while since we spoke. But I do think of you often. And I have had people on the programme in the last 12 months talking about this. And your name, I always bring your name up because I do think of you often. And I'm glad that you're back on the programme today. There's two ways I look at this. And I've read your website. I was on your website again today. I look at this two ways. One is that people of all different backgrounds are being experimented on. So you've got some very intelligent people and you have people who maybe are not educated, and then you have people maybe of lower intelligence maybe. And maybe that there's a mass experimentation period going on where data is being taken down, is being basically acquired on how this affects different people. Now, that's one train of thought, but I don't believe that. I think, in your case, it could not be a coincidence that you worked at the Particle Collider in Hamburg and at CERN in Geneva. And I think when we spoke last, back in, I think it was mid-2017 when we last spoke, I think I might have brought this up. Something you've seen or witnessed, something, not something that you're hiding, not in a million years, but you were party to something, I think, Catherine. I could be talking through my backside here, but I can't imagine it's a coincidence that such important, very high profile, but also very secretive projects, that you were there. I think somebody is worried that you might know something. Am I just being silly here? Is that just kind of science fiction film type stuff? Or maybe am I onto something, maybe?
I think the answers are kind of yes and no at the same time, and I'll explain why. And this is because when we first spoke, my understanding of my own situation was very sketchy because I lacked the full understanding of these body implants. So this is going back to the first interview in December 2016. And as I said, I found out that I am implanted personally through my my former colleague, Melanie Richan, in Brussels, because she is an expert on these implants. And she immediately recognized, you know, the laser surgery scars on my forehead that are so fine that they look like skin folds. But she has seen many victims and she has an eye for this. And she showed me using the bug detector that we had inside a Faraday net, which we used to measure body implants. She showed me that I too am implanted. And through that, I began to understand neurotechnology and how that is being deployed. And through understanding the phenomena and the symptoms of neurotechnology, I managed to go back through my own history and really try to investigate backwards in time when I was put into this program. And I discovered that, and this is now my best current knowledge to date, I discovered that I wasn't put into this program in 2011 when I first started being stalked by MI5. I was actually put into this program the first week I went up at Oxford as an undergraduate, and I was 18 years old at the time.
Wow.
And the reason why I came to this conclusion is because there were certain effects or certain curious incidents that started happening at Oxford that are now, looking back, a telltale sign of neurotechnology having been implanted in me as an undergraduate during my first year. And this means, for example, things like waking up literally on the second of the full hour. When I say the night before, oh, you know, we should really get up then and then to make the train, without an alarm clock, without anything, but literally down to a second. Well, this is typical, you know, neurotechnology testing and gaming that the intelligence agencies engage in. And
you couldn't do that before, Catherine. You couldn't tell yourself what time to wake up and then you'd wake up, no?
Literally, and not down to the
not
very
to the second.
And you also don't, typically you don't wake up, you know, just within an instant where you're fully on the ball as if you'd just been pulsed to the head.
Right.
You know, you have to be pulsed to the head to be able to do that. And stuff like that happened. And then I also remembered that I was actually stalked very intensely in the very few first few weeks at Oxford. So my current best understanding is it could be that I was in this program before as a child. And you know, there's certain things that might indicate that as well. But for sure, MI5 loaded me into this program as a human guinea pig when I was 18 years old.
And you think they play a long game? I think that's the term that came up before. They play a long game.
And another thing, that now that we're on this long game topic, now that I'm also helping court cases and I'm trying to work as a court expert and assist other victims, one of the things that became clear in the two cases that I'm working on right now, which is Frederic Laroche in France, and by the way, his court case is on the 29th of November in Grenoble, and then the second one is Siegfried Thomas in Biel in Switzerland. In both cases, you know, investigating the history and the background, the victims and I discovered that actually there's a very high likelihood that they were loaded in as generational victims. In other words, their parents were already in this program. And one of the key, you know, my suspicion is that this goes back to the old Nazi lists of people. You know, the lists that they used to keep about the people in the Holocaust, but also about their own employees. And I think what we're looking at is multi-generational experimentation and also multi-generational takedown operations.
Well, this is brilliant, Catherine. Can I come in there? This is very interesting because I've thought of this a lot since we spoke, a lot. And another possibility is we go back to when this, because as you quite rightly said, the technology is decades old. And because it's decades old, and because, I mean, I speak to a lot of, I've had a lot of astrophysicists on this program over the years. I've had NASA people on the program who talk about time and, you know, what we're learning about time all the time, how it isn't linear and all this sort of stuff. And I wonder, when this technology was, when it became available, why wouldn't the establishment or the elite or whatever you want to call them, why wouldn't they identify certain people as potentially subversive in the future. And they would know this when they are born, you know, or when they're very young girls or very young boys. Why wouldn't they identify them as potentially being a threat to, you know, the establishment or a threat to the order of things somewhere down the line? And so why don't we tag these people now? I've often thought of that as a possibility as well. Or am I way off with that?
No, I think you're right on the money. And this is exactly why the establishment, or I'd rather call it the crime cartel, okay? Yeah. Because even among rich people and you know, what we would consider the establishment, they split into those who are members of this criminal network and others who are not. So I just call them the crime cartel. And the members of this crime cartel are obsessed with genetics and bloodlines.
Yeah.
And it cuts both ways. They are obsessed about their own genetics, but they are also obsessed about the genetics of their enemies. And the enemies are not, you know, some soldiers or warriors. They are the everyday people who have the cognitive abilities to look, you know, to spot the lies, look through all this complexity, and have the personal qualities to fight back and fight to death. And in that sense, you know, that's why I said you were, when you asked, did I see something at CERN? I don't think it was something I saw at CERN. Yeah. I think it was something I saw when I was a toddler, back in communist Romania. So maybe your audience doesn't know, but I was born in Transylvania as a, you know, to a Hungarian and German family. And there are many Hungarians and Germans in the territory that now belongs to Romania. And I was born to a family where my grandparents were so-called dissidents. In other words, they were not willing to become snitches and informants for the communist system, and they were not willing to sell out and to, you know, bring about other people's downfall. So my family is mostly doctors. They were mostly working and trying to keep society together and help everybody. And that must have annoyed a lot of people who were still, you know, in the aftermath of the biggest Holocaust.
Of course.
You know, you had a big killing fest going on all across Europe. And what I saw as a toddler equipped me perfectly to what I have to do today, you know. And I think at the time, I didn't know, but I was already being watched by the people who had watched my parents and grandparents. And that is literally the best, my best understanding. And then add to that the business element. For example, there's, I think, a book out now about the involvement of IBM in the Holocaust. And I hope I get these details right, but I think it was IBM that provided the very early day punch card.
They did, the cataloging system. They supplied the cataloging system for the death camps. They did. That's right.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and now what it means is that IBM, this company that exists today and has now access to pretty much everything that we're doing, you know, through the technology that they provide for us, they were involved in mapping people and in cataloging them. Now, do you think they would have destroyed their archives? I mean, they were so valuable. Those were actually the original versions of what the NSA is doing now, which is mapping everything about us. You know, how often we make spelling mistakes in our emails. Everything is being mapped by computers, and it goes back to the catalogs of the Holocaust. So it's, you know, I really genuinely think that the situation we're in now, and maybe this helps people to understand what's going on, this is nothing new. It is the continuation of the big Holocaust.
But they can't keep it quiet now, because we've never been as bad as social media is in so many ways. It's also, in that other way, it's enabled us to connect to far more people than we ever could. So we're seeing people come forward from around the world. On the implantation in your forehead, have you or will you try to get that removed? What are you going to do about that?
Yes, I would love to, because I was tortured all day today. You know, I'm being pulsed right now. I have many, many implants all across my scalp. And what the intelligence agencies are doing is that they're ramping up the chip currents. So you have ever more pain, and moving around and just existing is ever more impossible and crippling. Now, the problem is that I have many victims who have tried to remove these implants. Now, the typical program set up by the crime cartel is that if you approach a doctor and you say you would like to have this implant removed, you're first of all painted as delusional.
You're mad, yeah.
You know, and then after that, they will try to do everything to put you away and ideally kill you even if they can, you know. Then if you get past that by reaching a doctor who has integrity and doesn't know anything about it, he might operate on you once, but when he discovers or she discovers that it's military technology, they will refuse to operate on you again. So in other words, to get this technology out of your system, I think the average victim would have to have something like 36 operations. Wow. Now imagine how long that takes if you have to, you know, put up with this faff every single time.
It's very dangerous as well, yeah.
And then the other thing is that there are cases where one type of implant that's maybe very big and shows up on scans is taken out. Other implants are put in, including nanotechnology that's self-assembling. So what do you do? And so my current strategy is to focus entirely on the publicity, on outreach work, and the court cases, and basically convince the courts to give us a court order that this should be done.
Now, tell us about the court cases. Are these two cases, because you mentioned two cases, one in Germany, I think, one in France, I think you said, are they cases being taken against the intelligence agencies or one intelligence agency? Who's being litigated against? Who's the...
It's much better than that, Richie. The two cases, the one in actually Switzerland, in Biel in Switzerland and Grenoble in France, they are, as far as I can make out, are being taken by the intelligence agencies against victims to destroy them. One of them is the Frederick Laroche case in Grenoble is, as far as I can make out, based on the evidence, is a staged car accident, and they want to put the victim away, claiming that he's so ludicrously dangerous on the road that, you know, he has to be locked up and medicated for life.
Wow.
The second case in Switzerland is one of a pensioner and his wife who are being machine gunned with directed energy weapons from their neighbor. And their neighbor is suing them for insult to honor for claiming that they are being assaulted by this neighbor. So... okay, so now the question is what the hell to do, right? So I am trying to get victims to actively sue the intelligence agencies like I have done in 2016. But there's also a way to use these court cases and to what I call system judo these court cases against the intelligence agencies by just putting as much expert testimonies and evidence into these cases against the criminal networks inside the intelligence agencies that they literally just, you know, cease and desist by themselves. They back off. But it's extremely hard.
Well, you found yourself how difficult it is to take an intelligence agency to court. It's extremely difficult because, you know, it's obviously a big faceless organization. You're looking at trying to find out, trying to get any information. I mean, the media doesn't even attempt to do it, but even if the media did, it's like trying to get blood from a stone, trying to find out who works for these agencies, what their departments are, and who might be involved in the sort of program that's being directed against you and others. It's so hard, Catherine, isn't it?
Yes, in a sense, yes. But when you start fighting against the system or this criminality, rather, because I'm not really fighting the system, I'm just fighting criminals, people reveal themselves because they have to. You know, if somebody is a member of this criminal network, he can stay undercover just for so long. But when push comes to shove, he has to either act in your interest or the criminal network's interest. And if you just keep throwing cases at them, bit by bit, you can uncover every single one of them. To give you an example, when I went into court, I stood up pro se, so representing myself. I stood before three judges, and the first two, they were shocked. And I could see, you know, people who get confronted with these crimes go through a cycle. And the first cycle, the first step of the cycle is the WTF face, you know, when they think, what the hell is this?
Yeah, that's the gang stalking, right? Yeah. That's when people are being gang stalked, which must be a terrifying thing, that.
Exactly. And then the second one is the one of just incredulity. But then when they get past that, because they take on the evidence, is one of utter shock. So just by observing the judges, I can tell, are they insiders or are they not? Because those who are honest, they will realize that there's no out. We have to solve this criminality now. Those who are, you know, derive benefits of one form or another from the crime cartel, they will fight you as hard as they can because they will want to keep their status within these covert criminal networks. So what I'm always saying to victims is that just start moving forward and note down the people who help you and those who actively fight you. And sometimes people fight you because, you know, either they're confused or they have other interests. But then with time, we'll find out who everybody is, you know. And the really encouraging thing is I worked extremely hard to use my insight into physics and complex systems to find a method to fight back. And the best answer I came up with is an affidavit that I compiled, an affidavit template that's on my website, and actually that I will release after this show. And it is codifying every single type of offense that the typical victims of this criminal network suffer. And most of them suffer an entire plethora of things that are so vast and so egregious that it's just not part of the statistical distribution of normal crime. So some sort of targeting program has to be behind that. And one of the things inside the affidavit template is also a public and a private list of perpetrators. And this is the list of people who the individuals have identified as having acted maliciously against them. And my strategy is to just make that public. So there will be a list of perpetrators that will just go out for everybody to see, and then a private list of perpetrators that we will deal with through the courts as well. You know, and
it's a very sound approach. Again, it's a very academic approach. I just want to ask a few questions that are coming in from listeners. Inevitably, I've had one or two tweets from people who think that you're making it up. I've tweeted back to somebody there saying, I can understand, even though I don't agree with it, but I can understand how somebody might think, because we're conditioned to think that people like yourself are, you know, deluded. I can understand why someone might think, listening to Catherine either now or 2 years ago, oh, well, she's imagining it. I can imagine that. I can understand why somebody might think that, even though I don't agree with it. But I can't understand why anybody would conclude that you're a fraud, that you're making it up. It's interesting. I've been doing programs like this for many years now, and I obviously have a commercial and national media background. I'm a real journalist with qualifications and degrees and what have you. It doesn't mean anything, but what strikes me is that your sincerity is unquestioned, is unquestionable. What does make me laugh, though, and I see this all the time, is when somebody like yourself, because you're articulate, because you're educated, when you put yourself out there and you get some attention, and you have done, others who have an interest in this very subject immediately claim that you're some sort of informant or paid shill or this sort of nonsense. And I think it's probably down to jealousy, the fact that you've gotten a lot of attention, not just from this programme, but from others as well. You tend to take this all in your stride, though, Catherine, don't you? You don't get too worried or bogged down by people saying you're a fraud or you're making it up. You just kind of carry on doing what it is you do.
That's right. And partially it's because I've read the documents that Edward Snowden released about the targeted takedown programs. So, for example, GCHQ, when they actively send trolls your way. And these are paid people to say the worst things about you.
Yeah.
And I'm working on how to actually uncover these and drag them into court as well. But, you know, what it comes down to is there's a healthy amount of skepticism, which I absolutely encourage. I encourage that everybody should question me to the last, all the statements that I'm making, and should check up on my credentials. So this is why I uploaded all the documents that I'm allowed to upload, you know, evidence that I did work at Oxford and at CERN and so on and so on. I'm not allowed to upload my Oxford degree certificate because then it will be copied and sold online, you know, for fake Oxford degrees.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
People are very welcome to call up my old college and check every single thing that I'm saying. This type of skepticism is extremely beneficial. But because we all actually need to learn discernment, you know, but when somebody says, oh, I'm an informant or I'm agent, I can prove that I'm not, because I plan to take every single Western intelligence agency to court or fight them in court. Now, no intelligence agency in their right mind would actively pay somebody to be in the vanguard of their own takedown. You know, so that's number one.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Why would they want somebody to make this an issue? Why would they want anybody to make it public anyway? They don't want people knowing about this stuff. So the idea that they get an Oxford graduate, a PhD, to ruin her life by making up a pack of lies is just preposterous, because there's no win for the intelligence agencies there. Because you, with your, again, with your ability to be articulate and to be easily understood, who needs that? You know, if I'm running one of these programs for MI6 or for the German intelligence agencies, I'm not going to give you money to talk about this. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, that's just me. Loads of comments on this, and we've got probably 15 minutes left. There's loads of really interesting comments. One being, is there a transhumanist angle to this at all, or is that something that you haven't had the time to look into? You know,
oh, the answer is yes. Exactly. It is a resounding yes. And I'm so grateful that people put that term, you know, raised that term, because once you have a name for it, you it's kind of more tangible. And transhumanism, as far as I can make out, is number one, the bio-robotization of people. So the fusing of humans with machines, which will lead to a takeover, and has already led to a takeover of humans by machines. And transhumanism also implies that we are expected to transcend our humanity, our humanism. And that is also what these criminals, who, by the way, are utterly psychopathic and mentally degenerate, that's precisely what they're dreaming about. So they do have these fantasies that they will just become some sort of uber powerful cyborg, but they don't realize that what they're actually becoming is a bunch of, you know, sad saps. But yes, that is exactly right. And it's so important, because once you use this term transhumanism and the bio-robotization, and once you learn more about these chip implants, you also discover that a lot of innocuous looking technologies, like our Wi-Fi networks, like, for example, 5G and smart meters, they are part of the transhumanist agenda.
Yeah, this is so important. This is hugely important. Isn't it amazing? Again, isn't it amazing to be talking to you this week when UK companies admitted that they're in talks with Swedish companies to purchase implants to put between people's thumbs and forefingers? And the UK mass media has been reporting this as a very positive thing. No balance to the stories, Catherine. You know, again, whether I'm a good or a bad journalist is down to the listener. But I'm competent. If I'm going to do a story about microchipping for employees, I'm going to find some opposition to it to balance my television news segment story. But no balance whatsoever in the UK media. This is a great thing. You know, let's get Swedish companies microchipping all of our employees so that we can open doors, we can access the secret files in our companies, more security, and everybody's just going for it. Yeah, it's a great idea. Why not? And this ties into what you've been talking about, no doubt.
Absolutely. And you know, if people knew that the reason why it's so positive is, for example, in the UK, by the way, I talk about the UK because most of your listeners are in the UK, but you know, the same applies to German intel, to Swiss, Indian or Chinese or Russian intel. They are all part of the same corporation, really, as I believe. But the reason why the media is reporting it that way is because they are part of the cartel. I think in the UK, most of the media outfits could be called MI7. You know, MI7 was the old propaganda unit. If you knew that most of the BBC actually works for MI7, and most of, say, The Guardian or whichever daily newspaper, you know, The Telegraph, would you take that fully in? I mean, if you knew that this is a message put out by MI5 to cover up the fact that they have already implanted most of you, and they want to make it kind of, you know, they're trying to cover their asses, let's put it like that.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
if you discovered that your five-year-old daughter has already been implanted and is being set up to be raped by remote control and will be part of a business plan where people can purchase a subscription to rape her remotely whenever they want to, you would look completely differently onto these chip implants, you know? And what I just mentioned, this egregious sounding example of, you know, a young girl being chipped and remotely raped, that is actually the everyday experience of most of the victims I know. We are all chipped in our genitals and we are all being raped.
Wow.
And I want to say that publicly because this is one of the hardest topics to talk about.
And these chips have shown up in MRI scans, haven't they? They have shown up.
So actually, exactly, these chips have shown up. And we were just talking, you know, with the investigators that I'm working with, how the hell to enable people to collect evidence. And currently I'm investigating if actually ultrasound might be a good option. And some victims reported that they have seen odd structures in ultrasounds. So the principle behind that is if there's a dense object somewhere in soft tissue, this should cause reflections in ultrasound and light up. And especially as far as genital chips are concerned, ultrasound might be the quickest way to see that. I should also say that most chips, to doctors looking at scans, will look like calcifications or lipoma. And that's what they call them most of the time. Because
hang on, Catherine, calcifications, or what was the second thing you said?
Lipoma. So lipoma. These are the two most common, calcification and lipoma, the two most common diagnoses I've come across. And the reason why this is what they call it is because that's the only thing they can think about. And that's exactly what it looks like.
Tell me about the genital implant. Is that messing with fertility? Is it?
It's in principle, yes, it should do, because these chips are communicating with radio frequencies nonstop. It's like having a little radio emitter in your genitals, depending on where the chip is, yes. And then add to that the fact that these chips are being accessed by targeted radio frequency towers. So, for example, when the intelligence agencies really want to psychologically, you know, break me down, I am going somewhere which is really important. I'm entirely focused on what I'm doing. And then I will see one of the gang stalkers take out his mobile phone, point it at me, and then I will feel how I'm being raped by remote control.
And you can't do anything. At that stage, you can't do anything. You can't grab... Yeah. I mean, for anybody who's seen Catherine in her videos, Catherine is you come across as a diminutive. You're a very slightly built lady. It's fair to say that, isn't it? I mean, the reason I'm asking that is because you can't very well jump on the guy and try and arrest him or do something like that.
That's right. And usually it's not just one person. Usually there's half a dozen of them around you. It's like cockroaches. If you see one, there are at least 100 around you, you know. And no, you can't. And you're completely helpless. And add to that the fact that there's a type of pulse or waveform that seems to travel not just through building material like Wi-Fi, but even through sheets of metal. And that's a technology that also seems to be involved in the communication with these chip implants.
Is that related to 5G at all?
It could be. It could be. I suspect it is, exactly, because 5G is not just a better version of 3G and 4G. It's a fundamentally different technology. So 3 and 4G, as I understand it, were kind of radiating off spherically from the emitter. But 5G are collimated pulses. That's exactly what you would use if you wanted to pulse chips, or if you want to build up a massive weapon system, you know, that can knock people out.
Tell me this. I asked you this 2 years ago, and I don't want to be rude or to pry or to be too personal. But obviously, listeners who might be hearing you for the first time, at least on this program, they might be hearing you for the first time. And some people might have not heard of you before. And by the way, Catherine's website is stop007.org. Check it out, stop007.org. What we have here, folks, in case you've just joined the programme, is an Oxford-educated particle physicist and systems analyst. She's a Master's of Physics. She got her doctorate from the University of Oxford, worked at the particle colliders in Hamburg and at CERN in Geneva in Switzerland. Incredibly intelligent, incredibly articulate. And she's talked very candidly in the last couple of years about how and why she believes she's been the victim of gang stalking and targeting through directed energy weapons. We've talked about that in this hour. If you've missed any of it, the podcast will be online very, very soon. I was going to ask you about your family and support from your husband and your extended family. Have they been, was it difficult for them early on? And I know we did talk about this 2 years ago. How supportive have they been for you going through all of this?
Well, I have to say, in the beginning, it was extremely hard because my parents just rejected any talk of this, which is strange because they fled the communist system, so they know about this crime cartel. But then I discovered that actually my mother is chipped, just like me. And I also learned that this technology can cause anger. It can make you drop your attention or make you focus on other things and make you reject things. And that is exactly what I have seen. So when I managed to work around this technology, I managed to get my parents to be very supportive. So by now, they have accepted this. They can't help me, but they have completely accepted it. And, you know, they are doing whatever they can to help me. So that certainly has happened. Now, as far as my husband is concerned, I'm sorry to say, and I'm also will be quite frank about this, because I know this happens to virtually every single victim. My marriage has been broken up. And my marriage has been broken up in an extremely targeted way. And this is extremely important for people to know about, because if they start fighting this crime cartel, the same thing will happen to them as well, most likely. So if they expect it, they can guard against it. And what happened is that I have noticed that my husband was being worked at night. So I woke up many times and I just heard him groan in pain, literally. And he was very uncomfortable, but was still asleep. And when I tried to wake him up, I would put my hands somewhere, you know, first on his cheek and then on his forehead or his head. Eventually, I realized that there was an extremely intense microwave beam or something related to microwaves coming through the wall pointed at his head. And what that showed me is that he was being tortured, but he was also being worked through neurotechnology every single night. So imagine, it's like in the film Matrix when he goes through the training program. It is a bit like that. In your sleep, the intelligence agencies can work you and do torture training and conditioning on you to make you assume certain opinions or to turn on certain people. They can show you images, they can send voices to you that you will perceive subliminally. And this, I have evidence, I personally witnessed this happening. And now they succeeded. They have broken up my relationship, and my husband and me are getting a divorce.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm genuinely sorry to hear that, though not entirely surprised, because, you know, how difficult is it for you, what you've been going through for years, and then if you're right and this has been happening to him, it's no surprise at all. I'm disappointed to hear that. And you said that you will come across this. This will be fairly common for people who've been targeted like this.
Absolutely. And you know, Richie, the biggest benefit, if I may call that, from just, you know, coming forward and talking about these problems should be that many, many whistleblowers who are planning to come forward or have come forward, who are struggling maybe in their personal relationships, that they realize that it might not be anything to do with them or even to do with the person who's maybe turning on them. They literally cannot help it because this technology is so overpowering. So my only way to fight back is to collect information from a large group of people, put it up online and hit the courts, and now start getting court orders and emergency injunctions against these people, because the truth is we know exactly who they are.
This is really interesting to me, and that's something I'd like to follow with you on your journey, to be honest, and, you know, pick it up again in future programs, not to leave it as long as it has been since you last came on. I'd be delighted to get back into this with you in the early new year, because I think you're credible, Catherine. You know, I'm supposed to be objective. I'm well aware of that, but I find you very credible. We spoke at length before December 2016. We had a long phone conversation, and I find you credible, and I find the possibility that these programs are real and going on, I find it very credible as well. I really do. I'm sorry that it's what I'm sorry to hear what you've just told us about your relationship with your husband. I really am sorry to hear that. But I do want to point out to our listeners, she's been, and again, it's the academic training, there's no doubt about it. She's been a meticulous recorder of everything, for want of a better way of putting it. She's meticulously recorded everything that's been happening on the YouTube channel and on the website. Stop007.org is the website. And if you go to YouTube and you look for Stop007, you'll find Catherine immediately. And, you know, you'll see Catherine, which is a very good thing. First of all, you'll see her in the videos, and you'll be able to hear directly from her what's been going on. And she's kind of put all this evidence together, which I think is very is very compelling. We've got about 90 seconds left. I'll give you that 90 seconds for you to sum up today. Thank you for coming back on. Really like speaking to you. It's a very difficult thing to be talking about. I do believe it's going on. It's happening to a lot of people. And I look forward to speaking to you again in the early new year. But I'll let you sum up, Catherine. Final message for our listeners today.
Well, my final message for all the victims out there, or for people who want to understand the full scale of this, please join me tonight when I come online on my channel. I'm not sure when that will be, maybe in an hour, maybe in 2 hours, where I will launch the affidavit collection. And there I will explain my strategy for fighting back. So I think when you really take on everything that I've been saying or what it implies, most people get very scared. And I guess my message is, do not be scared, do not be terrified or paralyzed by this. Join us in fighting back. And if you're not affected, I think you might be without noticing, you know, but if you're not affected, you can really help us by keeping a tab and also by putting pressure on the government agencies and law enforcement who can help us. You know, external people asking about our cases and asking why the hell are you not helping makes a huge difference. So, you know, my goal is that by Christmas, we should be way underway in having this shut down once and for all. And my final sentence would be, you know, we have to all work together, because what we're doing is we're shutting down, to my best current knowledge, we are shutting down to an entire global crime cartel that has been with us, some people say, since the last ice age, but certainly for thousands of years. So please, we need your help.
Great
Thank
stuff,
you,
Catherine.
Richie.
Not at all. Thanks for coming on. Stay in touch through Twitter. Send me a message when there's anything to report, and we'll be happy to report it and get you back on. Stop007.org is the website. Stop007 on Twitter as well, if you want to follow Catherine on Twitter. And that's the handle on YouTube, Stop007. Thanks again for your time, Catherine. Speak real soon. Look after yourself.
Thank you, and bye.
Bye for now. Catherine Horton, live on the line to us there from her home in Switzerland. It's 3 minutes to the top of the hour. Thanks for the tweets there to come in during that. We'll wrap it up right now because I'm out of time. Thanks to Michael Rivero, who came on despite the fact that he's a bit under the weather. Thanks to Mike for that, top man, trooper, in the first hour. And to the lovely Catherine Horton, whom you heard there in the second hour. We'll be back again tomorrow, Wednesday, at the usual time of 5 p.m. That's GMT or UK time, however you like to say it. In the meantime, look after yourselves and one another, leaving you with some music from Sting. Don't forget the podcast online in 10 minutes' time. YouTube will be up a bit later on as well. See you tomorrow.
As a hurricane.